Hey, what's up, folks? This is Tony Brewer. You're listening to, or watching as the case may be, Cogitations. Cogitations is the podcast where we think about things, we contemplate them, we turn them over in our minds, and then we discuss them. Daniel chapter 7, verse 28, Daniel writes, "Hitherto is the end of the matter. As for me, Daniel, my cogitations much troubled me. My countenance changed in me, but I kept the matter in my heart." Now, we're not going to keep the matter in our heart. We're going to talk about it. And today we're going to talk about Free for All Friday. And the first segment here is going to be about the man of sin, the Antichrist. We're going to discuss the identity of these entities, or entity as the case may be. One of our listeners shared with me an excerpt from a lectureship book, and I didn't write the man's name down. I don't know who this is from. Hold on a second. I may be able to tell you. Nope, I can't, because I'm scared it'll kick me out of something. All right, bear with me. We're going to be eventually cooking with hot butter again. We got to come back. Anyway, if I see the fella in the comment section, I'll ask him to remind me again who this man's name is. Actually, that's crazy. Hold on, where's my phone? I can look it up here. Bear with me. Oh, yeah. Season 6, episode 66. And we're talking about Antichrist. No, it's not a coincidence. That's the devil working. No, it's not really the devil working. I probably shouldn't joke about that. But it is funny. I did not even think about that, Scott. Hello, Diana Harden. It's good to see you. All right, bear with me, folks. Let me go back here in my private messages and get this. Where is it at? All right. Hold on. Earl Edwards. All right. So the person sent me, he said, "Not sure if you already have something to talk about for the question and answer, but if you have time, would you be able to discuss Antichrist and the man of lawlessness?" And of course, I'm like, yeah, because I like talking about these topics. These topics are very... Let me rephrase that. I was going to say these topics are very difficult. They're not difficult. They're just abstract. And we're 2,000 years removed. And so it's not really definitive. Like, I can't say, well, the man of sin and the son of perdition in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 is X, and the Antichrist is X, or maybe Y. And I'll die on this hill, and you can't say anything that I think would change my mind. I will tell you that I'm pretty passionate about the conclusions that I've drawn on this. And they have been informed by a person that did a lot of study on this, but I've looked at everybody. Like, I've read Wayne Jackson in detail. I've read the denominational scholars on this just to understand what they teach. They teach error, as you can imagine. The Antichrist is going to come, and he's going to be the harbinger of the destruction of the world. So, yeah, that's... anyway, all right. Sorry, I got distracted. So let me go back. Oh, never mind. Sorry, listen to this. Here's my response. I absolutely would. This is a good topic. Two topics, really, I think. But yes, I shall. Thanks so much. No problem. Thank you. And then I reply, "You're welcome." Then I say, "B.J. Clark wrote a paper on the identification to the man of sin or the son of perdition from 2 Thessalonians. He has an interesting take on it that I believe is right. If I can find it, I'll send you the paper that he wrote. It's a good read. I've got a couple of terabytes of digital resources. I can't find that paper anywhere. I don't know where it is. I've put it somewhere and I've tagged it in some way and I can't find it, but I will eventually find it because I'll run across it from time to time when I'm looking for something else. Anyway, so here's his reply. He says, "Thanks. I appreciate it. Have you read Earl Edwards in Truth for Today commentary on the passage? He makes some good points also, and I've never read that I know of. I may have read it for an assignment in school. I just got done reading a chapter by Goebel Music on the Antichrist and Man of Sin. It's interesting also. I can take a few pictures of the chapter and send it to you if you like. Well, I have those pictures, and I thought that I take about 3 hours to prepare for this podcast, and I thought that I was going to be able to get up and prepare for the podcast and read this chapter. I'm going to have to do some stuff, but I was able to look at the conclusion, and I've got the conclusion here, and we're going to read his conclusion. And if you're not familiar with the format of lectureship books, basically you'll have a lectureship, like the Memphis School of Preaching lectureship the Memphis School of Preaching lectureship will be ongoing in May, I believe. Hello, Village Fishing. Good to see you. So the Memphis School of Preaching, what will happen is if you're invited to speak at the Memphis School of Preaching, you're assigned a topic and you have to write a manuscript. I spoke on the Truth and Love lectureships in Pulaski, Tennessee, and my topic was the pride of life. Okay. And so I wrote a 10-page manuscript on the pride of life. In fact, I'll tell you what I'll do just for grins and a little bit of nostalgia. I think if you just search my name and add Church of Christ, it will come up. My lecture. Tony Brewer, Church of Christ. All right. I've got. Yeah, there's a few. There's a sermon where I preached at this congregation in Oklahoma. And I look like I weigh 100 pounds less. Man, I got to get on top of my, I got to be like Paul and stay on top of my body. All right. Copy. I'm going to send this to you. This is the lecture I did on the pride of life. And you may enjoy this. Well, I've got a book back here on my bookshelf that's got my manuscript in it because they compile all the manuscripts into a book. And each topic is a chapter. So that's what our brother was talking about whenever he sent me this. Well, I've never read it, but I've read the conclusion, and I'm going to have to move these pictures to my iPad and maybe blow them up and mess with the contrast or something. But I've got this. So we're going to look at this, and we're going to see what at least the conclusion that Goebel Music had to say on the matter. And I'm going to spend a few minutes here telling you what I believe it is first. So let's go to 2 Thessalonians first and let's read this content. I am going to put for the duration of this show the tip jar. And the reason I do this is because folks ask me to do it. And remember, every dollar that you send us through PayPal goes into advertising for the show to promote the brand. And I am very, very excited. We are maybe a week or two from rolling out our store. It's actually going to be on Shopify this time, and it's a print on demand. I still owe one of you a t-shirt, and I'm going to be making that right. But I have gotten a friend of mine in the United States to test it. We ordered a product this morning, and if he receives his product and it's a good quality and we're all this, that, and the other, then we're going to make this store live and it's going to be fun. And we got some really neat products, sweatshirts, t-shirts, mugs, thermoses. We can even do wall plaques and stuff like that. And it's just going to be another way to help support the show. And the profit is going to be going into raising awareness of the brand. All right. 2 Thessalonians. I guess what we need to do is, in 1 Thessalonians, Paul wrote to the church in Thessalonica, clearing up some misconceptions about the second coming. And then he wrote the second epistle to the Thessalonians to clear up some misconceptions about the first epistle. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. First Thessalonians is, well, those of us that are in Christ, if we die before Jesus returns, what's going to happen to us? No, don't worry about that. comfort one another with these words. The dead in Christ are going to rise first, and then those that are alive will be caught up as well, and then we're going to forever remain with him. That's the comfort. Oh, well, then we're going to cast off our shackles of bondage when it comes to labor and living in this world, and we're going to look to the horizon. No, no, no. Paul wrote another letter and said, listen, don't do that. If a man doesn't work, neither should he eat. You don't eschew your life here on this earth because you're waiting for Jesus, because you don't know when he's coming back. And in fact, there is something that has to happen that is preventing him from coming back because of the one who is in charge of sending him. In other words, it ain't even time. And that's what 2 Thessalonians is about. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. Now we beseech you, brethren, by the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ and by our gathering together unto him, that you be not soon shaken in mind or be troubled, neither by spirit, nor by word, nor by letter, as from us, as that day of Christ, as that the day of Christ is at hand. In other words, it's shortly to come. Let no man deceive you by any means. So Paul is going to give the people in Thessalonica in the first century some concrete advice and fortify them against being deceived about the second coming of Jesus. Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come except there come a falling away first, and that the man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition, who opposeth and exalteth. Now, he's given us some characteristics. Who opposeth and exalteth himself above all, and is called, that is called God, or that is worshipped, so that he, as God, setteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. So this man is sitting in God's seat. This man, whoever this is currently in the temple, or is in the temple. And he is lawless. He's a son of perdition. He's a man of sin. And he's exalted himself, and he is opposing all that is God, or all that is worshiped by God, or all that is that is worshiped. And I believe that I would read this into the context, who opposeth and exalteth himself above all that is called God, or that is worshiped. Anything that is called God or that is worshiped, he opposeth. Now, the idea of something that is worshiped, if it's worthy of worship, then it's deity. And I believe this is Paul just being very, he's covering all the bases here. Now, let's keep going. Remember ye not that when I was yet with you, I told you these things. So this is not new information to them. They know what Paul is talking about. And I will put forth here that in verse 5 is the reason that you and I are never going to know beyond a shadow of a doubt the identity of the individual or phenomenon in this chapter. Because Paul is referencing and bringing to mind a conversation and teaching that he had with them personally. And you know that a conversation is much easier to convey complex, abstract ideas and nuance than it is with when you're writing. And when you're writing to people with whom you have a history with, you, with, in other words, if I'm going to pick Diana Harden. I have never had a face-to-face conversation with Diana Harden. We've never sat down at dinner. We've never got to know one another face-to-face. We don't know about each other's mannerisms. We just don't know much about each other at all, except I'm a Christian and she's a Christian, and we can relate on that. So if I wrote her a letter, it would sound very, very different than if I wrote a letter to Aaron Dotson back home. If I wrote a letter to Aaron Dotson, I would be speaking and referencing things that we've both experienced, and it's heavily nuanced. But he would be able to get the nuance. There is nuance, I believe, in Paul's writing to the church of Thessalonica, because he's writing here about things he's already told them. So he's bringing to remembrance, to their remembrance, this sermon, this lesson, this conversation, whatever. And we're not privy to that conversation or lesson. So just think about that. Verse 6, and now you know what withholdeth that he might be revealed in this in his time. All right, so now you know what the holdup is. Because, verse 7, the mystery of iniquity. So evidently this iniquity is currently concealed. That's all a mystery is. The mystery of iniquity doth already work. Only he who now, the King James says, letteth until he be taken out of the way. I believe what Paul is saying here is this man of sin, son of perdition, this iniquity, the iniquity that is concealed, is going to be revealed. And when that happens, he that is restraining is going to stop restraining. In other words, there's nothing at all holding God back from sending Jesus except God's desire to send Jesus. You and me today, Jesus can come back at any time. Any time whatsoever. We have to be ready, all right? Now, let's keep going. And then shall that wicked be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth, and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming, even him whose coming is after the working of Satan with all power and signs and lying wonders, and with all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish, because they receive not the love of the truth, that they might be saved. And for this cause, so because of all this, God is sending a strong delusion that they might believe a lie, that they all might be damned who believe not the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. But we are bound to give thanks always to God for you, brethren, beloved of the Lord, because God hath from the beginning chosen you to salvation through the sanctification of the Spirit and belief of the truth, whereunto he called you by our gospel to the obtaining of the glory of the Lord Jesus Christ. Therefore, brethren, stand fast and hold the traditions which ye have been taught, whether by word or our epistle. Now our Lord Jesus Christ himself, and God, even our Father, which hath loved us and hath given us everlasting consolation and proof, and good hope, rather, through grace. I don't know why I said proof. Comfort your hearts and establish you in every good work. I don't know if there's another chapter in the Bible, maybe Hebrews chapter 11, that is so succinctly encapsulated in an actual chapter. Like, mankind, the man that broke the verses, the letters into verses and chapters, did a good job here. So who is this man of sin? Who is this son of sedition? I want to just get it out. I don't want you to wait any longer. I believe it is the Jewish high priest. Why do I believe that? Well, because he's sitting in the temple. He's setting himself up as God. He is the mediator currently between God and man of his particular, of the Jewish people. Like, that's what the high priest does. The high priest is the only one who can actually go into the holiest. But now, the reason he's the son of perdition, the reason why he's the man of sin, the reason why he's the son of lawlessness, is because the temple is no more the place of God's dwelling. In other words, he's apostate. There's been a falling away. So let no man deceive you. But we're going to go back and read a little bit. I'm going to offer some running commentary. For that day, that's the second coming, shall not come, except there come a falling away first, and that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition. Now, what? I appropriated language here, falling away, there's a formal falling away that's going to take place. It took place in the first century. And I've got to tell you, there's smarter men than me, and they talk about this falling away. And I don't know exactly what Paul's talking about here. It could mean that there's a falling away of Christians. And I lean toward that because of what I read in Hebrews, the book. Because the way I teach Hebrews is that Hebrews was written and delivered with some haste to the Jewish Christians in Jerusalem in the interim time that Vespasian and Titus, the abomination of desolation, returned to Rome. Vespasian was coronated, and Titus was sent back to destroy the temple. I believe a falling away took place there. Well, why? Well, because they said Jesus prophesied that the abomination of desolation was going to be the harbinger of the destruction of Jerusalem. And the abomination of desolation showed up, didn't do the job, left, and now y'all are reproachful because Jesus had a failed prophecy, and therefore he's not that prophet from Deuteronomy chapter 18. Well, there's just one problem. Jesus explained on earth that there's going to be a reprieve for the people of God. And so the book of Hebrews was written to tell Christians in the city to get out of the city. We have here no continuing city. Go outside the city bearing the reproach of Christ. So now we have this falling away because many Christians fell away. And according to Hebrews chapter 6, if you fell away during this time, you were not going to take heed unto the signs and remove yourself from the city, and you'd die in the destruction of Jerusalem, and it would be impossible to restore you unto repentance once you've tasted of the heavenly gift and all that good stuff. So anyway, I think that's what the falling away is, because the falling away, the revealing of the man of sin, the son of perdition, and God consuming him with the spirit of his mouth, and destroying him with the brightness of his coming, well, the description of the destruction of Jerusalem was Jesus coming in punishment on the Jewish people. And that was spoken into effect by the word, by the Spirit of God's mouth. It makes sense to me. And so the man of sin, the son of perdition, is the Jewish high priest. Because, and let's keep going. So he sets himself up showing that he is God because he's crooked and he's taking worship. And he shouldn't, because nobody's supposed to come to the temple and worship. Remember John chapter 4. Verse 5. Remember, we talked about this while I was with you. So Paul doesn't have to be like ultra hyper fixated and focused. He just has to speak to them as people who are familiar with the concept. Verse 7, because the mystery of iniquity that is revealed, it already works. Well, the Jewish high priest was working already in the world. And only he who now restrains will restrain until he be taken out of the way. So once the Jewish high priest is taken out of the way, in other words, the temple is destroyed, there's no more priestly line, there's no more references to the genealogies and all that, a Jewish person in AD 100 could not prove which tribe they were from. And even if they could prove they were of the tribe of Levi, they have no place to do liturgical service and worship to God, because the Temple Mount was raised to the ground, no stone left on top of another. And then shall that wicked be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming. It may be that many people in the world thought that Christianity was just another sect of Judaism, and thought that the high priest standing in the temple was actually legit, and they did not believe he was wicked until the destruction of Jerusalem. And then they said, oh, well, then he was revealed to be false and wicked because the God of heaven and earth would not allow, like, no, nobody's able to come against the temple. The only time the temple has ever been threatened is whenever God is doing it through an entity to punish his people. So that man of sin, that wicked, that mystery of wicked, of iniquity is revealed at the destruction of Jerusalem. Even him whose coming is after the working of Satan with all power and signs and lying wonders. And again, admittingly, this is a tough passage, but I would be able to explain it better if I could find BJ's paper. Anyway, the idea here is even the Jewish priesthood, it is after the working of Satan. It's a lie. Satan's the father of lies. Now, listen to this. Verse 10 through 12, I think, is very important because, well, let's just, and with all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish, because they receive not the love of the truth that they might be saved. What is the truth that they might be saved? Jesus isn't a false prophet. The abomination of desolation showed up. You don't have to fall away. If you believe that Jesus is who he said he is, and you paid attention to Jesus when he was teaching on earth, then you would know that the abomination of desolation showing up, you know he's going to have a reprieve. So, or the Christians are going to have a reprieve, and you should have been able to put two and two together. But God sent a strong delusion that you might believe a lie. What is the strong delusion that you might believe a lie? Because Jesus has not come back yet. He's never coming back because the destruction of Jerusalem didn't happen whenever the abomination of desolation showed up. They believe the lie that Jesus is not the Son of God because you can't have a prophet prophesy a prophecy and the prophecy not come to fruition. All right. And for this cause, God shall send them a strong delusion that they should believe a lie, that they all might be damned who believe not the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. Could you imagine in Jerusalem when the abomination of desolation left, the Christians who went back into Judaism and their Jewish cohorts, how they would take joy and laugh the faithful Christians to scorn. You're following a false prophet. You're following an impotent Messiah. He said X was going to happen. X showed up and X didn't do what Jesus said he was going to do. He's a false prophet. Folks, I believe that the abomination of desolation, leaving and going back to Jerusalem, those people looked at that and said, you know what? Because the abomination of desolation did not do what Jesus said it was going to do, then Jesus is a false prophet. And they were deluded and they believed that lie. You see, that was God working. So God caused them to be delusional in a manner of speaking. It's the same way God hardened Pharaoh's heart. God hardened Pharaoh's heart by his actions. Pharaoh, and you can go look at the verses there, Pharaoh hardened his own heart. Now, is this a salvation issue? No. I'll tell you the things that I've heard of people who said that the abomination of desolation is. I've heard that the abomination of desolation is the beginning of Gnosticism. So the beginning of Gnosticism, think about it. Gnosticism denies Christ, denies deity, says that through your own meditation, your own volition, you can become enlightened. That's Gnosticism. Well, the Colossian heresy was the seed of Gnosticism. The Colossian heresy was the seed that would grow into the tree of Gnosticism. And if you personify Gnosticism, it kind of works. but I don't think that's as strong. I don't think that's as strong as an argument for the Jewish high priest. I've also heard some people say, and Wayne Jackson, I believe, takes this position, that the son of sin, the man of perdition in 2 Thessalonians 2, is the Catholic Pope, or the Catholic Church and the Pope and all that. And I'm like, well, that can't be true, because A, the Catholic Church was not working in the world then, and B, hold on a second, right here, verse 4, who opposeth and exalteth himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he as God setteth in the temple of God. No person claiming to be the Pope has ever sat in the temple of God. And I'm not talking about the physical temple that was on the Mount in Jerusalem. I'm using the temple as these people define the term. They define the temple as the church. The Pope has never been a member of the church. The Pope has never even been a Christian. He's always, in fact, there's a better argument, in my opinion, for the Pope being Antichrist. The quote-unquote Antichrist. And there's no such thing as the Antichrist. So, in other words, you would have to change the definition of things in order to shoehorn the Pope in here. And I respect and admire my brother Wayne Jackson. He's gone on to his reward, and I'm certainly not going to rake him over the coals. But it's, you know, I just don't see it being the Pope. Like, you can't get past that one hurdle. The Pope has never been in the temple. Oh, well, Scott, you're welcome. I did not see your comment there. Tony, are there points for and against the church at Rome being the man of sin? Yes. Go to Christian Courier. I think that's Wayne Jackson's website, and just type that in and read what he has to say on it. Don't just dismiss it out of hand because I made a 3-minute reference to it on a podcast. Like I said, if Wayne Jackson were here right now, I'd push back against him and we'd kick it back and forth and flip it around and poke at it and prod it, but we'd leave as brothers. There's no way I would make a split over this, and it just wouldn't bother me at all. And if that's not our attitude, then we don't have the stuff to be able to talk about stuff like this. Bishwaji, I think that's how you pronounce that. Great topic. Thank you. Goodness, we got 145 folks in. Excellent. Now, I'm going to read Goble Music's chapter, and I wish the brother that sent me this was in here, because I would just simply ask him, from your reading, what was Brother Music's conclusion of the what was Brother Music's conviction on who the identity of this person was? I think I can deduce it from this conclusion, but I'm going to read this conclusion, and bear with me. It's hard for me to see. All right. Yes, there was. Woo. Could you imagine? Think about, now listen, you know, I get political and I ain't scared to do it. Don't you long for the days whenever we had a president as morally upright as Bill Clinton? Is that not a sad commentary on the decline of morality in Western culture in the United States? That we long for the days whenever there was so little scandal associated with our government. Anyway, that's okay. I'm done with that. But yes, that's okay. Let's read his conclusion. Let us hasten to say that a man who in any way opposes Christ, denies the divinity of Christ, refuses to believe on Christ, and teaches and practices things contrary to the word of Christ, is Antichrist, and as such as his following, a principle of lawlessness and is to that degree the man of sin. Wherever this principle is found, there is the mystery of iniquity. All organizations, institutions, and practices of men that grow out of the exercises by man or men of this character are developments of the man of sin. To make it clearer, let us state that whenever and wherever men have added to, taken from, changed, perverted, spoken presumptuously, used their tongues and say, "He saith," spoken a vision out of their own heart and not out of the mouth of Jehovah, make void the word by their own tradition, corrupt it, handle it deceitfully, or go beyond it in any way, there we find the embodiment of lawlessness and the man of sin at work. This will always be the case as long as there are those who deny God's right to govern them and go about to establish their own authority in religion. When a man assumes to be wiser than God, I think we can say he fulfills the statement of setting in the temple of God, showing himself to be God, and exalting himself above all that is called God. It is God's place to make laws for his people. However, this evil principle of lawlessness takes that authority on itself and so changes the laws of God. Let us just go one step further and say that all dissatisfaction among Christians with the laws and appointments as God gave them is a manifestation of the spirit of rebellion against God. Also, all organizations that grow out of such manifestations of the man of sin and the Antichrist. I have not read the entirety of this chapter of this lectureship book, but I think I can deduce from this reading that one of two things are being taught by our brother Global Music. And of course, Brother Music has also passed on to his reward. And if I don't ever get a chance to read this chapter, I'll be able to ask him one day, because I believe he died in faith, regardless of what I agree with or disagree with in this chapter. Okay. I believe what my brother Global Music is saying here is he's making the case that Antichrist and the son of sin, the man of perdition, or the man of sin, the son of perdition, the son of lawlessness, are the same entity, and that anyone who opposes Christ can be classified with these designations. Either that, or he made a case for the identity of the son of sin, the man of sin, and the son of perdition and Antichrist in the chapter, and I'm not privy to that because I wasn't able to read it. And here in the conclusion, he's making a 21st century application. Now, let me tell you something. This conclusion right here is a very, very good, even if you are dogmatically associated with what I taught here today, that the man of sin and the son of perdition is the Jewish high priest. Even if you are vehemently associated and dogmatically believing that what I said is true, this conclusion is a superb 21st century application generally of that text. And that's why I read it in its entirety. And I think that's why God, in his infinite wisdom, decided to use the language that he uses and had and wasn't very, like, didn't just spell it out for us. It's kind of like Paul's thorn in the flesh. Why is Paul's thorn in the flesh not identified? Because every one of us who read about Paul's thorn in the flesh, we associate something in our own lives that's a thorn in the flesh. And then we then can get the benefits from that recording of Paul's problem. So what do you think? Do you think I made a good case? What do you think the son of sin, the man of sin, the son of perdition, who do you think that is? Or what do you think that is? Let me put the comments back up. All right. Now let's talk about Antichrist And, oh, man, we took the whole, guys, we're going to take the whole hour with this. I didn't mean to. But I get kind of passionate about it. I like it. What am I doing here? Oh, yeah. I'm doing my trusty, rusty e-sword. We're going to do search the New Testament for A-N-T-I-C-H-R-I-S-T. That's how I type with an index finger. Four verses. All of them in 1st and 2nd John. All right. Little children. It is actually two of them are in chapter 2. One of them is in 1st John chapter 4. And one of them is in 2nd John. For many deceivers are entered into the world who confess not that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh. This is a deceiver and an antichrist. So this goes back to Brother Goebel Music's conclusion. And this is why I read that, is because it's a good segue into the identity of antichrist. Folks, anybody can be an antichrist. There is never in Scripture any designation, any identification, any reference whatsoever to the antichrist. In fact, let me hold on just a second. I want to make sure I didn't spell it right. Yeah, so here's what I did. I wanted to know what was out there. I Googled, is the Antichrist mentioned in the book of Revelation? Revelation 13, the first beast rises out of the sea and is given authority and power by the dragon. According to Wikipedia, the first beast is interpreted as the Antichrist. There's just one problem. How in the world can you interpret? Well, let's just go to Trusty Rusty. All right, let's go to Revelation chapter 13. Starting verse 1 through 10. Hold on. All right. And I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having seven heads and 10 horns, and upon his horn 10 crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet was as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him power. That's Satan, by the way, I believe. And his seat and great authority. Satan set him up. And I saw one of his heads, as it were, wounded to death. And his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wandered after the beast. And they worshipped the dragon, which gave power unto the beast. And they worshipped the beast, saying, who is like unto the beast, and who is able to make more war with him? And there was given unto him a mouth, speaking great things and blasphemies and power. That was, anyway, that, like, there's nothing here that would identify this as Antichrist. Because, again, we have, and I'm going to go back to Trusty Rusty. Let's go to search. We have an identity of Antichrist. Many deceivers are entered into the world who confess not that Jesus has come in the flesh. Well, I guarantee you that that beast that rose out of the ground or rose out of the sea, that's the sea of people, if he's associated with Satan, he would say, yeah, that's Jesus come in the flesh, and I'm here to oppose him. So as weird as this is going to sound, if we look at that designation, the beast is going to be a deceiver, but I mean, he's not going to deny that Jesus was in the flesh. I don't think. I could be wrong about that, but anyway. All right. Let's go to 1 John chapter 2, and I'm going to go there in my hard copy. Well, it's not a hard copy of the Bible. It's a really soft and supple goatskin bound copy of the Bible. 1 John chapter 2. There's a preacher, a missionary. He spent a lot of time in Africa. His name's Loy Mitchell. And he'd go, Big John. And that meant the gospel of good John. Then he'd go, Little John. And the funny thing about him going, "Little John," he was like 6 foot, 17 and a half inches tall. And I mean, he had a wingspan of about 9 foot and 37 inches. It was, I mean, just a mountain of a man. And he sure could preach. He preached a hole in the ground. And I'm not exaggerating. I've told you a million times I don't exaggerate. All right. Sorry. Okay. Let's go. Where am I at? 1 John chapter 2. All right, I'm going to start reading in verse 15. "Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world passeth away, and the lust thereof. But he that doeth the will of God abideth forever. Little children, it is the last time. And as ye have heard that Antichrist shall come, even now there are many Antichrists, whereby ye know that it is the last time." I wonder if, it's a conjecture, I wonder if this is associated with the falling away. And these people saw the abomination of desolation, and they're saying, Jesus Christ hasn't come in the flesh. You see, those people would have been once of us, but would have not really been of us because they went out from us. They've tasted the heavenly gift. Think about that a minute. Again, just something to think about. All right. "They went out from us, but they were not of us. For if they had been of us, they would have no doubt had continued with us. But they went out that they might be made manifest that they were not all of us." I think this is John's way of saying that if they would have remained with our group, they wouldn't have left, that they left for the sole purpose of wreaking havoc. When they left, they were manifest as not being part of the fellowship. But while they were with them, they were chameleons and they blended in. Have you ever known people like that? I have. "But ye have an unction from the Holy One, and ye know all things." This you and I, folks, have no whatsoever unction from the Holy One. This is miraculous. John is saying, you have the you've had prophecy. You have the gift of discernment. You know all things. You know this. I don't have to write this to you. "I have not written unto you because you don't know, but because you know it, and that no lie is of the truth." So he's writing them this. He's writing this to them to steel them, steel, strengthen them, and to put them in remembrance of the truth that they already know. This is evident. "Who is a liar but he that denieth that Jesus is the Christ? He is an antichrist that denieth the Father and the Son." How many more times do we have to read that? The antichrist is a person that denies that Jesus is the Son of God. All right. "Let that therefore abide in you which ye have heard from the beginning. If that which ye have heard from the beginning shall remain in you, ye shall also continue in the Son and in the Father. And this is the promise that he hath promised us, even eternal life." All right, let's go to 1 John 4. I'm going to start reading in verse 1. "Beloved, believe not every spirit, but try the spirits whether they are of God, because many false prophets have gone out into the world." Well, he just told you that there were people who were able to go out into the world that were not in fellowship with God. "Hereby know ye the Spirit of God. Every spirit that confesseth that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh is of God, and every spirit that confesseth not that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh is not of God, and that is the spirit of Antichrist, whereof ye have heard that it should come." Now listen to it. This is an important part. You got to lean in and listen to this. "And even now, already is in the world. Ye are of God, little children, and have overcome them, because greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. Folks, there's the identity of the Antichrist, of Antichrist. And again, how many times do we have to read that definition? If you deny that Jesus is the Son of God, you're Antichrist. And Antichrist was in the world then. We're not waiting on a future coming of the Antichrist. Antichrist was already there. And then I'm going to go back to this picture. And we're going to close the podcast. We may have to do, I don't know what we're going to do. This not a free-for-all Friday. I'm going to have to change the thumbnail. Well, we're going to have another free-for-all to make up for this one, because I really enjoy the free-for-alls. But I guess this was kind of like a free-for-all in that it was a listener request. But anyway, I'm going to read this conclusion again in its entirety, and then we'll close out the show. All right. Let us hasten to say that a man who in any way opposes Christ, denies the divinity of Christ, refuses to believe on Christ, and teaches and practices things contrary to the word of Christ is Antichrist, and as such is following a principle of lawlessness and is to that degree the man of sin. Wherever this principle is found, there is the mystery of iniquity. All organizations, institutions, and practices of men that grow out of the exercises by men or man of the character are or men of this character are developments of the man of sin. To make it clearer, let us state that whenever and wherever men have added to, taken from, changed, perverted, spoken presumptuously, used their tongues and say, he saith, spoken in a vision out of their own heart and not out of the mouth of Jehovah, make void the word by their own tradition, corrupt it, handle it deceitfully, or go beyond in any way, there we find the embodiment of lawlessness and the man of sin at work. This will always be the case as long as there are those who deny God's right to govern them and to go about to establish their own authority in religion. When a man assumes to be wiser than God, I think we can say he fulfills the statement of sitting in the temple of God, showing himself to be God, and exalting himself above all that is called God. It is God's place to make laws for his people. However, this evil principle of lawlessness takes the authority on itself and so changes the laws of God. Let us go one step further and say that all dissatisfaction among Christians with the laws and appointments of God as God gave them is a manifestation of this spirit of rebellion against God. Also, all organizations that grow out of such are manifestations of the man of sin and the quote-unquote Antichrist. Folks, that is a wonderful note. We have studied thus far in this sermon. We have studied so far in this podcast, I should say, the man of sin, the son of perdition, technically in his context, I believe, is the Jewish high priest, and he was revealed and taken away and destroyed and all that good stuff on the destruction of Jerusalem. And for further reading, that wasn't going to happen. Matthew 24:14, the gospel had to be preached in all the world. Colossians 1:23, Paul preached the word to all the world. The gospel had gone out to all the world. So the man of sin is the sign of the readiness of the second coming. And that was revealed, in my opinion, in the destruction of Jerusalem. And then that Antichrist is simply people who deny that Jesus is the Son of God. And they were working in the world. And probably specifically Cerinthus, a Gnostic scholar in the first century, is about whom John was speaking. And it's probably why John wrote the Gospel of John, because the Gospel of John argues so very succinctly and adequately against the specific brand of Gnosticism that Cerinthus was espousing. And Cerinthus was espousing that Jesus did not come in the flesh. So that's it. That's what we studied. Now, if you want to be a man of a son of perdition and a man of sin or a woman of sin, just deny Christ, set yourself up in your own life. In other words, don't sit at Jesus' feet, sit at his seat, and you'll be Antichrist. You'll take upon yourself the spirit of the man of sin and the son of perdition. Thank you so much, Diana Harden, Paige Perry. If we want to submit an anonymous fee-for-all, free-for-all, hold on. If we want to submit an anonymous free-for-all Friday question and to request for a topic for you and Aaron to cover, what's the best way to send that? Well, I'm glad you asked. For show topics and questions, send an email to christianityisnow@gmail.com. christianityisnow@gmail.com. If you go to Christianity Now Facebook page, you can private message us and we'll get it there as well. And it'll be anonymous. In fact, the person that sent me this topic for today, he's a friend of mine on Facebook, and he just sent it to my personal Facebook page, profiles, private messages. You can do that as well, but if you're not my Facebook friend, it'll go into a separate deal that I won't get the notification for. But if you send it to christianityisnow@gmail.com, then you'll be able to, it'll get to me and I'll be able to see it because I'll get a notification of it. And if you send it to Christianity Now Facebook page, and send it through the messenger there, then Aaron and I will be able to get it. So that's how you do that. Thank you so much, Paige Perry, for asking that. And I look forward to reading your questions and such. What am I doing now? Yeah, let's do this. All right, I'm gonna put the tip jar back up. Remember, we would love for you to support us monetarily. If you cannot support us monetarily, but you still want to help us out, there's a few things that you can do that's totally free. First off, subscribe to the YouTube channel, go to the Facebook page and like it, and go to invite your friends and just select all. And if you've got 5,000 friends in your friends list, or if you've got 5 friends in your friends list, invite every one of them to follow the page. And then go to Substack, Christianity Now at Substack, and subscribe for free. And every time you get an email about an article that we've written, copy and paste that sucker into your Facebook and say, hey, everybody, read this article. And let me tell you something, that is priceless. Now, if you say, well, Tony, I'm in a position where I'd like to help you monetarily, nearchurches@gmail.com, PayPal. In fact, you can also do a $5 a month subscription on Substack. But if you want to be like, I just want to set something and forget something, I want to help you monthly, but how do I do that? Well, $5 at Substack. Well, I can't really do $5. Can you do a dollar? www.patreon.com/Christianity Now. And you can give them your information, and every month they'll take a dollar out of your whatever you give them. And that's only $12 a year. And think about if everybody that listened to the podcast that said, man, I wish I could help them boys out, if they just helped out a dollar a month, think about how much budget we would have for advertising, for promotion, for product design, and stuff like that. Paige Perry. Oh, the articles. Substack. You know what? Where is captions? Here, usually I have this ticker going on. Subscribe to our Christianity Now Substack. So go to substack.com. In fact, let me do this. Hold on. Let's go to dashboard. I'm going to visit my site. Copy. Paste. Boom. All right. Oh, really? Paige Perry. What? See, that good, Paige, that's so awesome. I listen to you like at least 3 times a week. Why do I not know all this? Well, probably because you listen to me 3 times a week. And that's so funny because that gets into selective perception, selective exposure. It's science. stuff like the reason content creators do this stuff is because we have to do it every time, because it fades into the minutia, and your brain, it literally just goes in one ear and out the other. And that's not anything about you. That's everybody. That's really why, as gospel preachers, when you preach, you tell people what to do to be saved every time you preach. At least I think you should. I try to do that. I don't always do it, but that's why we repeat things. You know, and teachers learn this. The best way for children, adults, anybody really to learn thing, well, the first thing you do is tell. You teach them, then you repeat the teaching, then you go into the cycle of repetition, and then you repeat it some more. And that's how you teach. But anyway, awesome. And it's not just you. I mean, everybody tunes that info out. So probably about only 5% of the people hear that, because it's just the minutia. All right, folks, y'all have been amazing. Thank you so much. Remember, don't be antichrist. Don't take upon yourself the spirit of the man of sin and the spirit of lawlessness. Boy, I really like that conclusion by Goble Music. He did a good job. And I don't know what his position is exactly on the identity of these. I think I do, but I'm going to have to read his article. And go check out what Wayne Jackson wrote. He makes a pretty good case for it being the Pope, but I think there's one hurdle that he doesn't quite get over. And that's all I've got. God bless every one of you. This has been Tony Brewer with Free For All Friday. Not a Free For All Friday. And we're going to have to figure out what we can do to make it up. God bless you. Remember, subscribe to Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and TuneIn Radio for the archive to these podcasts. God bless you. And we'll catch you on the flip side.